organically evolves into whatever it evolves into, or devolves, as the case may be.
Ours will be natural because we're all friends.
It never devolves until we start talking about books and TV shows. And then, and then it devolves really quickly because everyone has strong opinions about TV
shows.
We have
to talk about Friends.
No, we're not talking about Friends.
Okay. Wow, shots have been fired. I'm going to hide under the table.
We might all be friends, but we're not going to talk about Friends.
Yeah.
I weeded a guy out on a dating app because my first message was, what's the one TV show you can always return to like binge or watch while you're doing nothing? And I was like, I knew it the second I asked the question, and his response was Friends. I said, oh no, how are we going to get over this hurdle? I hate Friends. And we talked a little bit longer, but yeah, he's not going to last. Yeah.
I don't need someone who likes Friends. You just have to be able to tolerate it. Well, you guys don't live with me, so it's okay.
No, that's fine. Yeah. As long as it's not on in my presence.
You can watch Friends as long as I'm not home.
Well, that's the thing is if we lived together, I'd be in my room on my laptop, and you'd be like, what are you doing? And I'd be like, you know what I'm doing. And then you guys just have to walk away.
It's like you tying a tie on the door.
I'm watching Friends.
He's back up. A little privacy, please.
Oh,
your
no.
Mom comes over. She's like, why is there a sock on the door? What's Ellie doing? You're like, no, Mom, it's not like that. She's just watching Friends.
Don't go in there. She's watching Friends.
She's just watching Friends.
You can't look. You don't want to see this.
You cannot unsee it.
Oh, my God.
I like that Laura and I are on the same side on this.
Well, we'll see. Laura, have you ever watched Downton Abbey?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like Edith or do you not like Edith?
I find Edith annoying.
Oh, thank you.
But I also think Edith gets a bad rap.
Thank you.
She's annoying because she's been treated very poorly.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. It's
a
just,
very long time.
Yes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, is like we got in like this big discussion about it last week because it's just that I don't like Edith as much as I like Mary. And I agree with you. It's
why would
not
you put Mary first?
Yeah.
Edith definitely
the
goes.
The dead one was the
Sybil, of course.
Well,
everyone,
we said that too.
Everyone likes Sybil.
But my complaint with Edith is mostly based on the fact, spoiler alert, people, if you haven't watched Downton Abbey.
Where have
that,
you been?
Right. Is that she brings the baby back and then she like ruins some woman's life just because she can't get a hold on her emotions. It's like either leave your baby in France or bring your baby to Downton because obviously
right.
your parents don't care.
Right.
She like,
didn't know that.
She should have though, like. I mean, have you not?
But Mary gets
attention?
Away with a lot more than Edith would have, and
well,
so Edith didn't know
that
she could do that,
right?
But I think the thing is,
yeah,
is like,
did Mary kill some guy in bed?
Yeah, but what
like we gotta smuggle the body out.
But what bothers me about it though is like, there's so many conversations that Edith sits through with her mom, going, "We can't let little Sibby leave. Like, she needs to be here." And it's like, if they feel that way about Sybil's kid, why would your kid be any different?
Because she feels different because she's not treated the same as Mary
right.
and Sybil.
Right. She was
the outsider.
But you know what
yeah.
though?
She looks more like her father. The other two look more like their mother.
But I would say though that Sybil's not given any extra special permission. She's basically banished to Ireland and they won't even send money for Mary's wedding. Like Grandma sends the money is what I'm just saying. Is it's just like Sybil's not treated any special.
The end of that.
You don't think you finished it?
I don't think I
have you finished it. You finished it.
No.
Oh my God.
I stopped watching it at a certain point
so you don't
because
even know.
I was upset
you don't
with
even,
all the Edith baby
you don't even,
drama.
You don't even know who Edith is now. You don't even know.
I was going to say that
I'm
Edith,
starting,
I'm
Edith
did kind of become less annoying as the season went on, but yeah, the baby thing was a weird twist that they threw in.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was kind of unnecessary, really.
And that's the thing, is it honestly, it doesn't bother me that she has a kid. It doesn't bother me that she's with, like, Michael Gregson. Like, that's who, like, she... none of that bothers me. What bothers me is that she brings the baby to the village and then ruins some woman's... And ruins some woman's life because this woman gets so attached to, like, the baby.
Which,
and
yeah. Why wouldn't you assume that would happen?
Right.
I don't know, that whole landed gentry nonsense.
Wait, you guys haven't even seen the end. You don't even know what happens.
I know what happens.
Do they lose everything?
Yeah.
No.
Now the movie
but the movie's
coming out,
and I'm so excited.
Be based
end of September.
Trying to get everything back.
We didn't lose anything because Matthew was a baller.
Yeah.
He was like, we're not going to do this anymore.
We're going to save money.
We're going to save
Come on,
family.
Lord Grantham. Don't be an idiot.
Head nod.
That's
okay,
that's
who's your favorite downstairs character?
Are you gonna say O'Brien?
No. The one that runs the house.
Mrs. Hughes?
Mrs. Hughes. Yeah, that's a good choice. I like that choice.
I like her so much I don't know her name. It's that lady.
It's okay.
The one with all the keys.
I'm like that usually too. Like, I can never remember people's names. I spent 20 minutes today trying to think of the name the Dave Matthews Band, and all I could describe it was that horrible group singer that white men like, and it's horrific and terrible.
That their tour bus dumped a bunch of feces in the Chicago River.
God.
That band.
Yeah. I can't stand them or the people that like their music. Sorry. Not sorry.
A bunch of my cousins were going to, I don't know if it was last summer, going to their show, and they were all excited about it. And I said, I don't know what happened, but it skipped right over to them. Not my jam.
Anyway.
You were like, that's not a thing, and
no, I'm not going with you.
So who's your favorite downstairs character? Have we talked about this?
Oh, no. I'd probably say Anna.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that she's so amazing, and then she suffers so much.
I know.
And she's so resilient.
No one should hurt Anna, and they do.
But I do like Carson, too.
Yeah, well, Carson...
I like Carson and Mrs. Hughes.
Yeah, they're really
relationship
cute.
Is adorable.
I'm obsessed with Bates. I love Anna. I love Anna, but I'm also obsessed with Bates. There's a darkness about him that I enjoy.
Because he's a murderer?
Yep.
Oh, again, spoiler.
Yeah, he's seen things.
Yeah, and done
things. He's seen and done things. And the actor plays him so well, and he's so mysterious. But he loves Anna, and she brings to him joy. And I just love him.
I feel like we could now go into the type of books you like and find those dark characters who find that, like that one girl that, like, they fall in love with, and Ray's like, no, he's so great. Don't you understand? And we're like, dude, he's a serial killer. But he loves her.
He loves that person that I love. Okay.
Yeah, Severus Snape is my favorite character in Harry Potter.
Well,
yeah, that's a tough one.
This is actually
an adventure. You don't understand Harry Potter, or you don't understand?
I don't understand Severus Snape being your favorite character.
I don't either. I'm sorry. I understand why he's really likable.
Not really.
But I understand why people cling to him, I guess, is the better.
I mean, I get that, yeah. You know, he's carrying that torch for blood.
Here's my
Lily.
You have to be such a dick about it. Okay. That's one way to play it.
He's complicated. Don't worry. I wasn't the person watching that show, You, and thinking, oh, he loves her so much.
Oh, no. I wasn't that person either, but I
didn't finish watching that either.
Oh, my God.
I
literally couldn't predict. Like, I knew what the conclusion was, but the way to get to the conclusion, I was like, what the?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What is happening?
Yep, exactly. But you know how everyone on the internet and the actor came out and he was like, you shouldn't like,
yeah.
Don't worry, I did not, I was
no,
like,
no.
You're terrified.
I did like John Stamos, though. I was like, hello. I was like, how you doing?
I don't even know if I got to John Stamos being in that.
It does.
It disturbed me. That was, I
the
really,
it was a very, it's a very disturbing show.
So I felt I needed to move to something not quite disturbing.
Yeah.
I don't know what I
That's
would
understandable.
Do,
I had to
I
watch it in one
watching.
Sitting.
Ooh.
Because I was
oh,
like,
God. Was not an option.
I mean, the first couple episodes moved really slow, but then you hit a certain point and
you're like,
I
don't know
what that is. I had to watch them all. I was like, and then I was at the end and I was like, what the hell?
I think as soon as you put the guy in the thing.
Yeah, you were done.
Yeah,
you're like, I can't do
you're
this.
Like,
it's not how things should happen.
Anyway, why did we want to have Laura on the podcast today?
Obviously, I think we have 10 minutes of conversation proving why we wanted to have her on the show. Oh, did you want me to ask a question? Okay, well, Laura's a recent graduate of the program at Wayne State. She's the first person to do the Master's of Library and Information Science and the Master's in Public History. Are you the first Master's in Public History at all?
No.
Okay.
Just to do the
That's what I thought.
Someone told me that someone else would be the first person to do those two duals, and we should make the record clear that you finished first.
Oh.
Who's starting a turf war?
Yeah.
I think they just made a mistake because they thought that another student that we know was going to be the first, but they're not done yet, and Laura actually graduated.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh. No, Laura did it first.
Why are we treating this person like...
Well, I don't want to. I don't want to pull people through anything. But we're trying to elevate you.
Oh, thank you.
It's the first.
We don't have to elevate me by knocking other people down.
No, exactly. That's why I didn't say any names.
No, but
that person's on the journey, and they're just not done.
Everybody's on the journey, but I think that your accomplishment should be rewarded, considering you were in the program when this program started.
There was like a blog posting about it, so I'm pretty sure it's legit. I think it was on Facebook.
I think I might have saw it there. But I just think that the fact that you, like, because you started and you were in the same program as me.
And I finished.
Well, I would hope that that's how this goes, but you don't finish TV shows, so.
And there are a lot of people that don't finish grad school.
I'm very noncommittal on a lot of things.
But I think it's just important to note that, like, and like, well, we can get into this, but the program was started when you were already admitted, yes?
Correct, yes.
And so you had to then sort of work your way into the program using courses you had already taken because you were on a different path. And I think that's what should be acknowledged, that you went above and beyond to make sure you got this degree.
I kind of fell into it. Yeah, it kind of worked out that when I was registering for classes in my first semester, the research and methods class was full, and Dr. Tracy Newman was teaching it, and so I emailed her, and she said, no, you can't get into my class that's full, but you could get into the
public history.
Yeah, so I did end up taking that.
I was in
semester,
that with you.
Yes, with Ray. That's how Ray and I met. So I had that, but it was, I don't know, like 2 years later when they officially...
Yeah, it was kind of rolling out.
Right, yeah. They were working on it and the degree itself. So it was at least maybe a year and a half later that it became an official.
And then there was concern, can you do the MAF, Masters of Public History, and Library Science together?
Right.
Because they had already established you could do MA
in
Library Science, but not...
Right, so Tracy, who was also my advisor, did some work, some magic with my plan of work, and allowed me to use some history classes that I already taken, like the research methods class that I had with Allie. She loves to talk about.
It was the best
that.
Class I've ever taken. Sarcasm highly noted.
So that class isn't required for the public history degree, but I was able to use those credits and blah,
That's
blah,
good.
So it all worked out.
Yeah. Well, I think what people don't realize is when things like that, it's not like anything went wrong with your plan or anything, but when things don't go the way they think they will, or they don't, they take a circuitous path, that reaching out to advisors or reaching out to faculty, whether they're your advisor or not, can really go a long way. Because they want you to graduate. They want you to be successful and show that the program's successful. So they'll work with you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some people don't realize that until it's too late.
Right.
And they're like at the end of their program, about to graduate, and they're missing something. And if they had just come forward and been like, how do I make this work? Can you pull some strings? Help me. And it's not a shady thing to do. It's just making things work and fitting things together.
Right. And the things that, the credits that got moved around, and like I was able to use my practicum from the MLIS program in lieu of the internship in the MAPA program, which just meant I had to take those three credits as something else in the history program. So it wasn't, what they did with my plan of work wasn't anything sketchy. It was just moving stuff around. And that stuff had to be improved by Dr. Asha and Dr. Fow. So.
Oh, yeah. Makes sense.
So, yeah. Listen, just to clarify that I didn't get some sort of sketchy cobbled together.
No. But, I just think that people don't realize, they don't think to ask for
right.
help or
yeah,
things aren't
exactly.
going right.
Yeah.
Or... In my case, if I didn't know you and you hadn't been working in the CIS office, I wouldn't have known that my plan of work hadn't been approved.
Right.
After like 3 years, it felt like.
It's just sitting around somewhere.
I was like, oh my God. But I had to be like, hey, Laura, can you look into this for me? If I hadn't done that, then who knows where I'd be today.
Not registering for classes.
Yeah.
You have a hold.
So what made you, I guess, decide to pursue the MAPH instead of the MA?
I think part of it was, so when I decided to go back to school, and I don't know why I decided to do the history degree and the MLIS when I could, because I went back to Grand Valley to do a history minor to get the credit so that I could do the, and the woman that I met with to talk about that said, oh, I've heard that it's a lot easier to get jobs if you have two master's degrees. So I think, but I didn't want to work, you know, I don't have desire to go on in academics. I don't want to get a PhD in history. Not that there's anything wrong with that. So when they offered the MAPH, it just seemed like a better fit in moving towards what I eventually want to do with my career, which would be to work in a museum setting or in archives with that kind of outreach sort of component that would encompass more public history than straight standard history, I guess. Mm-hmm. So
that makes sense. I remember because the program was so new, I took that public history class with you and I really liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed it. But I was in the MA, MLIS, and I was like, this program's so new, I don't want to be, like a guinea pig.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be, like, some of the first people to do it. So I was too nervous to switch over. And I was, like, still not sure if I wanted a PhD eventually or something like that. And I thought, oh, it's easier to stay in this. And I felt like I got a lot of stuff through library science and archives that is similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the same, but
mm-hmm.
you can get similar jobs or, like, in
yeah.
the same kind of institutions with the MLIS without the math.
Right.
So
yeah,
that was the reason I didn't go that way.
Yeah, and having an MA in history is going to help in that too. So.
Right.
And plus you had that class, so you can always...
I know, I should just stay on for a third master's.
Yeah.
Everyone want me to stay here forever?
You and Allie.
Hey, there's an expiration date on my tenure.
Yes.
We're working towards it.
What is the timeline on a PhD program?
I think it's like 6 years
six,
or something.
It's five, but then usually you're almost, most people don't finish in five, and that 6 year is like the final writing stage.
Right.
And
everything together.
Yeah.
Sort of boot you. Well, that's the same as the MLIS, too. You have 6 years to finish it.
I thought it was five.
Okay.
It's six.
Six from the, again, the semester you started. So.
Mm-hmm. I know that the scholarship I have is limited to 5 years, and
mm-hmm.
I'll have had it for four. And so I was joking with my mom. I was like, if I go for a PhD, I can get that scholarship one more year. Because I think it's total at your tenure at Wayne, like regardless of what program
oh,
you're
yeah.
in. It's
yeah.
not like it starts over if I
right.
run in for a PhD. So I could only get, and she was like, okay, whatever.
She's so supportive.
Yeah, well, everyone really wants me to get a PhD except my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I don't know. I think you might take some time off and then, you know, change your mind about.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a lot of people don't know that they want to do it until, like, you know, they pick a career path. Like, I don't really know what I want to do when I grow up. It just seems like I do. But I know that, like, my dream job one day is to be a museum director. And when you look at a lot of the things, they do have PhDs.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's not going to be a bad idea to get a PhD.
No.
And especially now that I have the desire to do it, better to do it now than
yeah.
later.
Right.
I agree.
Well, and what are the credit requirements for, because I went to lunch with Lana and Dr. Angelescu and Dr. Bowman from CIS, I think on my last day, and Dr. Bowman and Dr. Angelescu were saying, because I was talking about some jobs that I had had interviews for, and they said something about, well, with the amount of credits you have, like doing a PhD wouldn't be that, you know, it'd still be hard, but
mm-hmm.
that you just have so many credits right now that going into it,
you're only allowed to bring in around 30.
Oh.
Even being here and doing my PhD here, I can only bring in 32.
Mm-hmm.
When you, if you were to start at a different university, because you have, you know, you already have a master's degree, they would start you at 30. It's just the way it works, because I think part of it is monetary, but I think part of it is also they want to know that you can do
right.
stuff.
Right,
because
their training
because
style.
Even you and I, who have, like, what, like 50 to 60 credits?
I think I have 52.
Already,
mm-hmm.
like, it's just about, you know, proving, and then it already counted for something else. So
right.
And they usually have, if you went away, they usually have certain requirements too. Like this class is still required, even if you took a similar one at your other institution.
Yeah.
Because they want, it's kind of like when you get on a job and you get trained or you go for an internship and then they hire you. It's like, well, they gave you all this institutional knowledge.
Right.
They want to, like, keep it, but they're going to train you or if you get a new job, they're going to train you the way they did it.
Right.
Even if it's the same job.
Yeah.
So, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, what made you want to go back to school in the first place before you get on this long journey?
What made you want to start this journey? Well, I was working in the records department of a law firm in Grand Rapids. And, you know, it was a hectic job and it was pretty boring, I'll be honest. The material was boring. You know, it was legal. We were opening files and closing files and pulling files back. And for the most part, they were not very exciting. You know, it wasn't. There wasn't a research or anything involved in it. It was simple utilitarian work. But our supervisor was a member of ARMA, and so she would let me go to different events that they had around town. And so that seemed... we went to the Grand Rapids City Archives. We went to Hope College and the City of Holland share an archive, so I got to see those things that were far more interesting as far as collections being held. So at first I looked into, you know, maybe if I could get some sort of ARMA certification, I could move into a different position, have more responsibilities here. Because at the time I was also working with our supervisor on trying to move more towards digital files and physical files, because storing physical files is super expensive, and the firm was in the process of moving to a much smaller space, so they were going to have more off-site storage costs, and there was a lot going on. Then I decided that I didn't want to work there anymore in any capacity. Just things that were going on in upper management and decisions that were being made and how we were being treated. And, you know, I looked at my work history and my education history and the type of job I was going to be able to get at that time, because I really had only worked professionally in law firms and different capacities, and I didn't want to do that again. And so I looked at, okay, what did I want to do? And I think I had just completed the Master Naturalist program through the Michigan State Extension School, which is basically like the Master Gardeners, but it's more all in the outdoors kind of.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then, you know, so I looked at maybe doing something in that realm, but that would have required, you know, like basically starting over and getting a biology degree, which I was never very good at. So. So, yeah, so then I just started looking around, and I knew Wayne State had the MLIS program because one of my really good friends in Grand Rapids went through it. My sister went through it, so I looked into that more, and then I saw that they had the dual degree with the history department, and that seemed – because I was also – I wasn't involved with the organization, but I went to a lot of their events with the Grand Rapids Historical Society and the Greater Grand Rapids Women's whatever council. Their name is far too long. but stuff like that, so – I knew that I was interested in history, and then because I had this background in records, the archives thing just kind of fell in with that too. And so the dual degree at Wayne State seemed like a plus. I'm from Detroit originally. My mom lives in Sterling Heights, so I could move back and stay with her if I needed to, which I did. So yeah, it just was a convenience factor, and it just kind of didn't involve going back and getting a biology degree. So.
Because you had worked... Didn't you spend a summer in Isle Royale, or...?
I did that after. So I quit the job at the law firm on December 31st. I went back to Grand Valley for that winter semester of 2016. And then about 3 weeks after classes ended, I left to go to Isle Royale.
Cool.
So then I spent the summer on Isle Royale. I got back to Metro Detroit, I think the day before classes started, because my car, the alternator went bad while I was on Isle Royale. So I got stuck in Marquette and had to get my car fixed.
Mm. Hey, there are worse places to be stuck.
Yeah, but I was stuck, like, on the highway in Marquette.
Yeah, I'd still rather be stuck in the highway in Marquette than in other places.
Yeah, no, it was fine. The Domino's guy was going to fix my car, then he couldn't do it, so he sent his friend over who was very...
This is exactly what Marquette is like. I wish I was... I love it.
So he and his girlfriend, so he got the alternator unhooked from the car, but he couldn't get it out of the engine case. And so he was this big, he looked kind of like Captain Lou Albano. You know who that is? He was in the Cyndi Lauper, Girls Just Want to Have Fun video. Anyway,
it's like, oh.
Look it up, children. Yeah, he was this big guy, and then he had this tiny, tiny little girlfriend, and was like actually in the engine compartment trying to pull this, and I'm like, this is not going well.
What an adventure right before you started school.
Yeah, so they ended up not being able to do it. So, and I can't even remember. That might have been on a Sunday. I can't remember now. But on that Monday, I started calling around different places in Marquette. Yeah, because I think I came back to Houghton on Saturday. That would have been a Sunday. Yeah, so, and there's one place I called that was right across the highway from the hotel I was staying in. The guy said, yeah, you can be here soon because we're sending people home. I was like, I will be there in 5 minutes. But I was staying at one of those hotels that they rent out rooms like by the week or by the month.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, well, this is going to be my life now. I'm going to live in Marquette in this hotel.
My car doesn't work.
Yeah, I got no car.
She never showed up at school.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder what happened to her.
I got no money.
Hey, as long as they didn't charge her, they're a worse thing.
Well, the question
yeah.
The reason I wanted to talk about the Isle Royale was because a lot of people with archival backgrounds and, I guess, public history and museums and stuff work for the National Park Service. And you just see jobs coming out of there for archivists and historians all the time.
Yeah.
And which surprised me when we were in that public history class.
Mm-hmm.
We were talking about people that hired, and they're like, the Park Service.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I never... It makes sense, because
mm-hmm.
when you go to the parks, there's all these historic markers, and then there's, you know, things and people talking about the history.
Right.
But I never really thought about it.
Interpretive.
Yeah.
Interpretive rendering. Yes, it is. They do hire a lot. It's very hard to get those jobs, though.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, Jeremiah Mason is the archivist for the Keweenaw National Parks, Isle Royale, and Pictured Rocks.
Uh-huh.
They're all three looped in, and he works in Calumet. But he, like, lived and breathed in Calumet. He's from Calumet. Like,
yeah.
He literally left the area just to get his MLIS and then came back. Like,
yeah.
His family's been up there forever, and I would love to have his job.
But a lot of those jobs are, even though they're open to the public, they're priority
mm-hmm.
applicants.
Sure.
So several jobs that I have applied for, you know, you get the email that says, based on your qualifications and education, you are qualified for this job. There are priority candidates so at this time we are not pursuing your application. So.
You're like, thanks.
I think though that's the thing with a lot of federal jobs.
Yeah.
Like when Lori and I were at the John F. Kennedy Library for alternate spring break, that's how a lot of them got in. Like the one archivist we specifically were working with, she's like, I was going to Simmons, which is in Boston. It's a library and information science school. And she was like, I was at Simmons and then I started volunteering here. And I volunteered and then they had a paid internship post. So then I did that. And then she paged for a while. And then she stayed there, even though she'd graduated, she stayed there. And then they finally like got her in at a lower level and then she worked her way up. But a
mm-hmm.
lot of them say that. And so even if you can get hired into one, like,
you
then you can
really
bounce really
right.
easily
yeah.
into another one.
Like, yeah. One of the, there's a archivist, I think you're in an archivist think tank group on
oh,
Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're in it or not. But they will sometimes talk about jobs and, you know, someone will say, oh, NARA has posted this job. And someone else will say, oh, that's just a tech job.
Uh-huh.
But if you get a tech job,
mm-hmm.
then you're in.
Right.
So. That's why I always encourage you to move to Missouri.
I've for that job in Missouri. I was qualified, but there were
priority
candidates.
I just saw it on the listserv again. And I was like, what is going on there in Missouri? I wonder if they'll, like...
Is it that Spanish Lake place?
Yeah. I wonder, though, if, like, if maybe that's just a feeder place. And so, like, a lot of people like you...
Immediately.
Like, who are recent graduates, get in as, like, the technician and then can immediately, like, bump to, like, a different job. And it's not that, like, there's necessarily anything wrong with it. It's just that it's a big feeder place. Because don't they do a lot of their big storage is in... Missouri?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I'm not
yeah.
sure if that is the actual place, but yeah, that place is always hiring, just not me.
We have faith in you, Laura.
Thanks. And I don't know, too, with that stuff, do you probably have to apply every time they post it?
Yeah.
Which once you do that USA Jobs thing and get all your info in there, then it's pretty easy.
You mm-hmm. just
have
like,
to answer the, yeah, you just have to answer the questions.
Yeah.
Which are weird. So.
Well, it's... Not fun either.
No. No, it's a tedious process applying for jobs.
Good luck, kids.
Nope.
Do you want to talk about it or is it too soon?
Oh, no, I can talk about it. I can talk about anything.
How many applications do you think you, whether it's that or it's pre-filled from someplace or writing from scratch, do you do a week?
I haven't done any in a while.
Because you got some callbacks, right?
Yeah.
We don't have to talk about those, but...
But
I understand putting it on hold because you're like waiting on
right
and thinking about that part of it.
I would try to do at least 5 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Once you know, I tried at the beginning to do everything, not my resume, but to write a cover letter from scratch for each one, and then I realized that that was killing me.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's the same. So I kind of made a template and then, you know, switched stuff out based on what kind of job it was. Because
yeah.
I was applying for, you know, just various different positions and whether they had more of a museum outreach kind of, you know, what they were looking for in the description or whether it was strictly an archives job. And
yeah.
So I, at the, when I was really, really into it, if I could get 5 out a week, that was, I was doing pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And then, you know, with the online ones, they're all different. So some of them you just upload your resume, and then some of them you basically have to recreate your resume in their format, which is so. It would be really nice if there was just a standard online hiring.
Like a common app
for
college.
Yeah, that everyone used, so you could just go through that, but no.
I think what bothers me, too, is, like, and, like, this is just, like, CNN specifically, because I know this is how they do it, but I imagine universities are like this, too, because they're big. I don't understand why you can't just submit your resume, because at a certain point, they have recruiters or HR people or whatever you want to call them who are going through and weeding them anyway. So why do you need me to enter stuff in every single box when I know that my – basically, it's coming down to my resume is going to land on someone's desk in 30 seconds, and either they're going to determine I'm qualified or I'm not qualified.
Well, even before it hits a desk, most likely, even if you don't fill out those forms and you submit a digital resume, it just goes through a computer system that runs it.
And I just did a thing – and I cannot remember the woman's name, but she worked at the Henry Ford, and she kind of created her own position there, and she did a talk kind of about how to apply for museum jobs, and I think that mostly was the focus. Obviously, I was paying a lot of attention at this time. Anyway, one of the things that she said was the Henry Ford system, you do upload your resume, but she said that when she gets to see what applicants have submitted, she can only see the first page of the resume.
Huh.
So if you have all your skills or experience for some reason on the other side, on the second page, whatever, she can't see that. So
interesting.
Yeah,
you
I
get,
know.
So then, again, you get weeded out from
yeah.
the system because you don't have the stuff in that.
Yeah.
So.
And I know even some of the systems, too, like when I applied for a job at CNN, they were like, well, why didn't you submit, like, your cover letter and your resume? And I'm like, I did, and they were like, it didn't come through the system, and then it becomes, that's not my fault
right.
that your system didn't attach these documents that
mm-hmm.
I submitted, because she was like, well, just send them to me. And I had them to her in like 5 minutes because I had them, because
right.
I was like, I did
right.
this. And so then that becomes a whole thing, is it's
mm-hmm.
like, is it's like, at what point do we realize that while computers are really great for a lot of things, you're probably missing, or you could be missing, the best candidate for your position because your system sucks.
Right. And if, and in that scenario, if it's just a blind posting and random people are sending their stuff in, the hiring person isn't going to contact someone and say, why didn't you do this?
Right. Yeah, they don't
right.
care. They're just
so,
going to throw it out.
They're
yeah.
just gonna
they're going to leave this
person
that doesn't
that
person care.
Didn't follow instructions.
Right. I feel like also the industries that we're interested in don't have the most normal, like, you can't really necessarily go on LinkedIn or Indeed for the types of job postings we're looking for. Because when I go in there just randomly searching archives or searching libraries, sometimes public libraries will show up
mm-hmm.
every once in a while. But again, you're better off going to their own website
right.
and looking at their job postings. But they, yeah, like the industries we're in, because we're not in business, then it's not being posted in those places.
Right.
And so you can't find things. It's like you have to work a little harder than other industries. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it does make you feel like, well, this other person got an MBA or whatever, and they can just apply everywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And I have to kind of search out places.
Right. Or wait for the archives gig.
Yeah. Yeah, the listserv.
To send out emails.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and she has a list of places where she looks for the jobs that she posts, so you can always go and look at those. But
mm-hmm.
it's very, yeah, it selects, you know, like 10 different places, so it is a lot more.
I just love her. Can we give a shout out to the woman who runs Archives Gig?
It's amazing.
You're so wonderful, and thank you so much for putting this together for all of us.
Yes. Thank you.
Just saying.
Yeah, and sometimes she's got stuff that's, like, adjacent. You know, it's not
right.
just strictly archived.
Yeah.
She'll sometimes have museum or just, like
librarian
libraries, jobs.
Yeah,
right. Plus, she's the one that ran that Librarians Go to Scotland trip, or whatever it was called, where the librarians went to Scotland.
Let's do that.
Let's just coordinate our own trip.
Can our podcast go to Scotland?
Oh, there you go.
Of course.
We're looking for sponsors. Always.
Podcast goes to Scotland.
Yeah.
Well, our first goal is to go to the UP.
Yeah.
That's our first travel goal.
Well, that's easy.
Wait, that's what I said.
You just get in the car and drive north.
Wait, that's what I said. Is like, and my friend Emily was saying something last week about wanting to go, and I was like, Ray, we could spend a weekend in the UP and knock out like 5 interviews and then be done for like a semester.
Pretty much.
Because I know people.
Yes, Allie's very well connected.
Just in the UP. Don't ask me about it. But I do think that, like, and that I guess this is a good segue into, like, jobs in the archives and library field. And I'm not saying if it's right and I'm not saying if it's wrong, because I've definitely benefited by being networked. But I think this field especially is so crucial to know people,
mm-hmm.
to get out and network, to, you know, even if it's you talk to someone for 5 minutes. And I think that that's something that hurts us in this profession. A lot of people are like, oh, libraries and archives and museums, I could get in this job and be shy. And I think we meet a lot of people who are shy or have anxiety and don't like interacting with people. But you know what? The good thing about that is that there's also people in this field who you will be networking with,
mm-hmm.
who are shy,
and
who have anxiety, who understand.
To meet anyone not in the historians field, this doesn't apply to them because I have met people that were like this, but as far as archives and libraries go, I've yet to meet anyone that was really mean, you know, or negative.
Yeah.
Maybe, I mean, I'm not saying I'm best friends with every person that I meet, but I have yet to, you know, have an interaction
no.
or talk at a conference
yeah.
or something
right.
with someone with that background that was that I left feeling lesser than.
Yeah, I think,
you know,
yeah,
everyone
we're really
seems pretty friendly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a very collaborative field, so
yeah.
I think that comes off in how you meet and interact with people.
And
and
because there are a lot of people who are shy, I think that we tend to be sensitive to that. So
mm-hmm.
if you're more outgoing, then you're going to pull someone in.
Right.
And if you're less outgoing, you're not going to feel intimidated by someone, because most people are just kind of, yeah, being collaborative and friendly.
Well, that's how we met someone at NDSA last year, is because everyone, you know, either you know people there already, or everyone was standing off by themselves. And so Laura was like, well, let's just go talk to her, because she was standing off by herself. And then we ended up hanging out with her for, like, the whole conference.
Yeah.
But that's really interesting.
And she was really interesting, and she was so, so nice. And I think that that's just a challenge that a lot of people have, because it's so easy for us to just hang out with our friends or, like, the people we know who are at that conference. But I also think that, you know, find your friend, because if it's easier for you to do it with a friend, find your friend and then go talk to someone you guys don't know, or talk to a group of people you don't know.
Right.
Or, you know, because if you and your friend and then you see two people across the way, then go over together. And then guess what? Now you all know each other.
And if the conversation doesn't go anywhere, you can just move on.
Right. And that's
no
a good
hard feelings.
Right. And that's the good thing with conferences, is no one expects you to talk to them forever. If you click, great. If you don't, there's 800 other people or 100 other people or
just
whatever.
Just those people.
Also, I know, because I know our number one fan is Tracy, and she's going to ask me, well, which historians were mean to you? No one in particular. They're just not as nice
well,
as
Tracy.
Are
we really name dropping right now?
No.
What I would say about historians versus archivists is, and I'm not trying to make this sound like a bad thing, because I think ego can be really helpful, but I think the archivists don't have the same level of ego. Granted, that's not all archivists, because some do have ego, but I think that being a historian is more competitive than being an archivist, because in archives, the priority is preservation of and outreach. Those are your two goals, and everyone is seeking that. And so it doesn't matter if Laura had the really great idea, or I had the really great idea, or Ray had the really great idea. It's about the great idea.
Right.
Whereas in history, it's all proprietary. It's no, that's my idea. Don't take that. Or I was working on that.
They tend to write. They write alone. They publish alone for the most part.
And I don't think that that's necessary. I think it's also part of the economy that's been created around historians with the whole publish or perish thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because as an archivist, if you're doing good work and you're presenting and you're doing outreach, that's enough for you to stay employed.
Right.
As a historian, it's built into a more competitive thing where you need to publish, or you need to be presenting, or you need to be doing all of these things in order to stay competitive.
Right.
Yeah, and I think some of that is changing in history, though, like with the thing that you worked on over the summer with the humanities.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It sounds like Jennifer Hart's doing a lot of
with digital
stuff and with the digital humanities and things like that. So I think there is but I think that historically that is a thing about that field.
Well, and also archivists, as similar to like librarians, it's a service field, because like they not only are they servicing what they're preserving, and they're servicing history in the grand scheme of things, but they're also servicing, they exist to service researchers.
Right.
So whereas historians, they may have an idea of the fact that they're servicing humanity by like writing history and keeping things alive, and I agree with that, of course. But, you know, archivists really have like a tangible service job of like you're a guest at the archive, and I'm here to help you with your goals, regardless if you're you know, a college freshman on their first history class or social science class doing research, or you're Ken Burns coming in to do a documentary. Like my goal's always the same.
Or you're someone from the public looking into your genealogy.
You know, and then I would say that that's part of what's hurting the historian profession, maybe, is that we're so busy writing to each other that we've left the public behind.
Yeah,
I think there's, I also follow a lot of historians on Twitter, and I think there's a lot of pushback about that, too, from them, not from me, because I just read what they say.
No, I think it's changing.
Yeah,
I think it's changing.
Yeah.
As younger scholars come up.
Yeah,
and I think that people are realizing that, you know, the writing to the general, to a more general audience is a way to reach more people. And then, you know, there's also, at the same time, pushback on stuff that people are writing for a general audience that isn't necessarily accurately portraying history. So
And I think that maybe that's somewhere where we all need to like come together and work on it, is because, you know, the people in the end who are going to end up paying our bills is going to be the general public. They're going to be the ones that keep museums afloat, that keep like professors of history employed.
State colleges.
Right.
Especially.
Well, right. And I mean, if you think about it, the big pushes right now, especially in politics, is community colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the community college professors who are really on the ground level. And they're the ones who are teaching to a general audience. And so I think that university professors who are up high could learn a lot from community college professors about engaging with everybody.
Right. And I think that's important because that's an important time. If you're not a student who naturally comes into loving history, I know a lot of people who, when I talked about, you know, going back to do a history minor and then going to do a master's in history, people would say, oh, I hated history in high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all their thing, you know, that whole K-12
yeah.
memorized dates, memorized names,
mm-hmm.
that sort of. So I think that whether it's community college or a university, regardless, that's where you got to hook the people to, especially with the dwindling numbers in the humanities.
Yeah.
Right. Funding.
When you have to approach it in a way that's going to make it interesting to the general public.
And that's the thing is, like, my brother's an environmental science major, and he was like, oh, I need liberals, like, I need help. And, like, he goes to Northern where I went, and I'm like, well, take this professor, because you will love him.
Yeah.
And he did, and because he, like, took a class with, shout out Chet Tafonso, he took the class with Chet, who was my history, like, advisor when I went through Northern. My brother Bob was like, oh my god, I really liked this class. And so then he took other classes, history classes, to fulfill his major, even though that's not
right
his area, because he liked it again.
Yeah, when I went back to do my history minor at Grand Valley, I had to take a writing history class, and the only one that would fit into my schedule with the other classes I had was it was like a 200 level class, and I tried to get out of it because I said, I have an English degree. I've written plenty. I'm good. And they said, no, writing history is different. So anyway, it was a medieval.
Allegedly. Allegedly it's different.
Yeah, that's what they said. Anyway, so it was a medieval history class, which I have no interest in. Sorry, medievalists out there. But the woman who taught it, Dr. Chapman, was just so passionate about the subject and made it so accessible and interesting that
yeah.
it was a lot better than I had imagined it would be.
And that's a great result.
Yeah, and I certainly did not switch my focus on history to medieval at
sure.
all. But, you know, I survived the class and enjoyed it, actually. So.
But I also think that that's something, too, is like, I mean, I'm sure the three of us right now could list a history class that we've taken where the professor had no enthusiasm about the topic. Or maybe they've taught it so much that their enthusiasm is drained. But you get excited about a class because the professor is excited.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've taught this, like, dozens of times.
Right.
They know this, like, the back of their hand. And if they're still excited about it, then you're like, oh, well, then I should be excited about this, too, because look at how much enthusiasm they
right.
have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, on the long walk home now, what do you plan on, you know, doing with your degree? Like, what's your dream job?
Well, right now, they're in a box somewhere. I think. I don't know. I found the green things that I got at graduation,
oh.
and I thought I had put them in, and I didn't, so I'm not sure where they are.
You were my hero. Like, Mike was like, why did Laura go back up on the stage? I was like, she needed another case for her degrees.
I told the guy, I got 2 degrees. I'll show you. It's in the program. I was like, hang on. I'll go grab you one. I don't need to see the program.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, well.
Okay, now I know.
Tip. I was hoping that Dr. Angeleski was going to be handing them to Dean Cawthorn, and I could just get one from her then.
Yeah.
And really had to hug him, and it was all weird, and she wasn't up there. She's, anyway, so what I plan to do with them
is frame them at Michael's because it's cheaper.
No, I'll probably just put them in those green things and put them back in a box once I find one. But you mean, like, more, you know, as a job or
yeah,
career
yes,
than
yeah.
the physical degrees.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell us all about your plans of physically.
I mean, I'll keep you posted on what happens with them once I find them again. I don't know. I want to get a job in the field.
But which field? Because you did get a really, you know, diverse thing. So you could work in corporate archives, you could work in public archives, you could work in university archives, you could work in a museum, you could work in university.
Public libraries.
I love public libraries. That's my dream job. I'm not on the right path, but
I can help you with that. I work at one now.
No, but here's the thing. So I got an interview at the DPL, and I went in there, and I have lots of diverse experience, and they were like, you don't really have any public library experience. It's like, but, and then
DPL has an agenda.
Well, I responded back to them. I have volunteered in 2 public libraries, so as you can see, that's where my heart is, because that's where I choose to be without payment. So,
yeah, and one of those public libraries is this very library. So.
Call Dawn. She'll vouch for me.
Yeah, I'll call Dawn.
So what do you think, Laura?
I don't know. At this point, I don't know. This is something that I'm thinking a lot about because I have these two interviews coming up, and
yeah,
they are in completely different realms of the field, and I'm not sure at this point which way I'm leaning. I think I would like to work somewhere that has a diverse collection, so that is maybe a little more interesting, as opposed to like corporate archive doesn't
mm-hmm.
sound that interesting to me. No offense, Sally.
teach their own.
And I know that a corporate archive consists of a lot more stuff than what I'm thinking about it.
Sure.
Because I think about it like when I worked in the records department at a
yeah.
law firm where I
she's
don't.
Got PTSD and she doesn't want to
yeah.
go back.
No, I don't want to see another minute book from a company that closed 30 years ago that we can't get rid of because whatever. I don't know. I would like to be able to use both degrees, and I think that sometimes in a strictly, if you're working as an archivist, you don't have necessarily as many opportunities to do something more in the public history realm, like outreach, or I think that you do, but it depends on the job, it depends
yeah.
on where it is you're working, it depends on their programming and things like that.
Well, and once you're in a place, you can kind of
yeah.
volunteer for things,
right.
or if someone's like on leave or gets sick, or they do that thing that you want to be involved in, you can
right.
say, how can I help you? Because
mm-hmm.
I find at the public library, the most fun I've had so far is like collection development, which is really cool, and book
mm-hmm.
buying and things like that. But there's so much else the public library does.
Yeah.
And then I'm really close with the librarian that runs the local history room. And so I get to do those projects, which kind of like dovetails with archives.
Right. Yeah.
So when you think about a public library, you think like, oh, programming and book buying. But then there's all this other stuff that happens.
Right.
And I just kind of put myself and I'm like, oh, I'll help you with that if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that.
Yeah, so.
So, but it's always getting in that's really hard, and I
right.
don't envy you right now.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, because, you know, if somebody's position is, you know, the outreach person, then that's their job, right?
Right.
So then how do you fit into
that? Yeah, I think that is, like, something, and I think that you're obviously aware of it, but I think people don't realize it. Like, over at the Ruth, or, like, other people can do outreach, but there's really one person whose like job is to do outreach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it would, and I agree with you, I would much rather be in like a smaller institution where there's like two or three of us, and so we can each do different things, because I think that that's more fun.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. So at this point, I'm not absolutely positive. I will know more in a couple weeks.
Did you, or have you looked into, so they have a lot of like how to get a job stuff for undergrads, right? At, you know, it's the offices right in FAB.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering what the services are for people, because obviously some people, if you're getting an MBA, most likely you already have a job, and then they're, you know, your company might be helping you pay
right.
to go to graduate school and get
mm-hmm.
your MBA, so you're just doing that for more training and you can move up in whatever company you work in. But I wonder what kind of resources our university has or department for, you know, helping you on this, because I think that that's really hard. Like, you were part of something that maybe helped you find practicums, maybe helped you find internships
mm-hmm.
along the way, gave you projects for a specific professor,
mm-hmm.
and then you graduate, and I obviously, like, okay, I graduated, I have these skills, but like I still need help. Like, how do
right.
I find a job or get
right.
a job or interview or things like that?
Yeah, and I don't know for the history department what they offer at
mm-hmm.
all as far as career advising, if they have a designated person that does any of that.
I think it'd be a good, interesting thing to think about.
Yeah, but...
Or Tracy, maybe you could get back to us and tell us if there's someone who knows
maybe
that.
Maybe it's Tracy. Tracy sends out job posts
she does,
and stuff,
yeah.
so... but SIS...
She can't
has,
do everything.
Yeah, I know. Sorry, Tracy. SIS has a career advisor.
Oh, okay.
So.
Good to know. I'm
yeah.
glad I know that now.
yeah, and it's Kim Schroeder.
Oh,
and
of course.
There's a page on the CIS website that you can go
to. She does everything.
That
she's like Tracy.
Yeah,
I think that that's a complaint I have with the CIS program now that, like, I'm done with it, is it's like, well, but I'm just
done with
talking. No, no, but it's
I'm
think,
not done yet.
I think it's a really
yeah,
important good. Critique is there's a lot of students who are in the program who are archival students. They're the majority of the students who are on campus, who come to campus, who are around. But there's only one professor in the department who's solely dedicated to advising them, and I think that that's unfair. I think that there's a whole team of archivists at the Reuther who
mm-hmm.
could be asked to help out, who would be willing to help out, who would be happy to help out, and they're not. So,
right. Well, and, yeah, I mean, that's a concern. I know, you know, Ray, well, you had moved too, but Ray and I had together, Dr. Jones.
He's going to be a guest soon.
Oh, excellent. He has been very supportive and has always said if you need any help,
yeah.
if you need a letter of recommendation, anything like that. So I know that he's
yeah.
available or has
well,
made himself
and I,
available.
And I think that that's part of the thing is, while I can see the advantages of moving online, that's my criticism of it is because
mm-hmm.
You're automatically, by taking it online, you're missing the opportunity to interact and network with a Detroit-based archivist
yeah.
who can connect you with internships, who can connect you with different people, who can connect you in the best possible way. And I think that that circles back to networking. And if you
yeah.
don't take his physical class, you might not know that he's willing to do all of those things.
Well, and
for
he's
you.
Not just a Detroit-based archivist. He's a nationally recognized you know,
mm-hmm.
archivist.
Yeah.
So if for him to know what you look like and who you are and to recognize you on campus, I mean,
right.
there's nothing
to be
better.
Familiar with your work and
yeah.
to, yeah, I mean, yeah.
And he's also just the sweetest guy.
Yeah.
So nice.
He's pretty amazing. yeah, so I don't know what the status of his class is for the fall, but I hope that he's
as
able
of
to hold it.
Whenever Thursday or Wednesday, it was still on. So.
That's good. They asked for more people to join the oral history class, even though it's full.
Oh, it's full.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's something,
isn't it? In other news, Laura, we started with talking about Downton Abbey and
oh, yeah.
the show that will not be named. But what have you been binge watching or watching lately?
And finishing or not finishing? I do watch some baseball.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't care that the Tigers suck. I'd still enjoy watching them until something horrible happens in the game, like one of the relief pitchers gives up a 3-run homer, and now the other team's gone ahead. Then I'll turn it off.
So you wait till the misery is very serious,
oh,
and then you're
till
like
it's crushing, and
till the ship is going down, and then you're like, okay, I'm gonna swim to shore now.
Yeah, but when the Tigers get good again and everyone else jumps back on the bandwagon, I can say,
you
yeah,
were there.
There's evidence. That
I
you
saw
were
that
there.
Guy have his first major league hit. Jerks. So let's see, what else have I been watching on television?
Law and Order?
No. Well, I did watch Criminal Intent a little bit the other day.
Nice.
I was watching some Schitt's Creek on demand the other day. So I live with my mom and stepdad, so they like to watch TV, so I watch the news in the morning with them before I go to work. I'm trying to think what else. I don't ever watch TV with them unless it's a baseball game, let's be honest. But then I usually go, I was watching, but I didn't finish it, and now I can't think of what the name of it is. It's that show on HBO where there's robots in the western town.
Westworld?
Yes. I haven't finished that one. I was watching Succession also.
That looks really good.
Is that based on the Murdoch family, you think?
I think it is maybe loosely based, but now I can't remember if they are a media conglomerate.
Well, just it
not,
just sort of made me think of it just because the one son was like away and then he comes back, and because I just listened to the New York Times Daily podcast
oh.
about it, and so and then I like saw the trailer for the show and I was like, wait a second,
it looks
is that
fair? I'm not sure, I guess I don't know enough about, they're not Australian,
right.
So
well, nobody's perfect,
yeah, so if it is, it's very loosely based on that. So yeah, so I had HBO, I have HBO, so I was watching some of that.
Do you watch Barry?
Yeah,
was
I was
so
watching
good.
Barry. I watched Veep. I did finish Veep.
Wow, good.
FYI.
Veep is great.
I know, yeah.
That last scene.
Let's see, I was watching something on, The Handmaid's Tale.
Mm.
But that show is exhausting.
Yeah.
I really want to get into it, but I don't want to be depressed with what's going on right
yeah,
now.
Don't
so
want
I'm gonna,
to.
I'm going to wait
yeah.
a little bit, and then I'll get into it
yeah.
later.
Then watch the video of Margaret Atwood talking about playing Goldie. That's much more rewarding.
That's hilarious.
I love when she says,
she's hilarious.
They call it stacking the pads, but where I'm from, they call it the Atwood.
What have you been reading?
I'm reading Circe.
Oh,
Circe, the
C-I-R-C-E, that
yeah,
one?
The whatever.
It's really
disease.
Popular. Yeah.
But
I don't know how to pronounce
it. I thought it was Circe.
You
I,
might be
I
right
think
Circe.
That's right, too, but I don't know.
So, yeah, it's like her story and
uh-huh.
how she ends up on that island. And then I've just gotten to the part where Odysseus, she has already turned the men into pigs. Spoiler.
of this ancient story.
Yeah, if you haven't read it, you're not gonna. Yeah, so now they're hooking up or whatever they're about to. That, and then I put on hold the Top Gun Command. And apparently I'm reading a bunch of fictional books about other things.
About real people?
Yeah, well, we can debate whether Cersei was real.
We just don't know, right? Like, say
conclusively.
We
debate it. And that's, yeah, a fictional account of Harriet Tubman, but I haven't started reading it yet. What else was I reading? Oh, I was reading, again, I never finish anything, so I circle.
Don't tell people in interviews that.
I circle around to these, but Cersei I'm finishing. But I was also reading, because that was another TV show. It's a biography of Ann Lister, because the HBO show Gentleman Jack.
Oh, yeah.
But I think I started reading it before I saw the show. Anyway, she was like a Regency landowner, and I can't remember what the something of her. It's a biography of Ann Lister, Regency landowner, seducer, and secret diarist.
Ooh.
She kept these secret diaries where she talked about having mad sex with ladies in a secret code. Yeah, it's a pretty interesting
story. That's fun.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, to paraphrase that Orphan Black show, her sexuality was the least interesting thing about her. So.
There you go.
She did all this other stuff, like she climbed the Pyrenees. And
yeah, I saw the ad for the show,
yeah.
But now I kind of want to read the book. What have you been reading, Allie?
I just started The Women of Copper Country. I love
Joan
of Arc.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and I was also reading, I'm also reading this book that is in my
Well,
head.
You don't, I mean.
I feel like I should read some of it. Yeah. Ooh. Mitchell
you could tell
Dunier,
us about the
Ghetto.
Library book, since I have your copy of it, but
mm-hmm.
I haven't started reading it.
The Invention of a Place, The History of an Idea. Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and it's. I was reading that. I went to get my hair cut, and my cousin cuts my hair, and she came out, and she said, are you reading that for fun?
And you're like, define fun.
Yeah, like for
what does fun mean?
Yeah, but it talks about the first ghetto. Ghetto, I guess, comes from an Italian term for, like, a copper foundry.
Huh. Wow.
Because Venice was the first place that were like, yeah, sorry, Jews, you have to live here.
Yeah. No, I knew about that, but I didn't know where the term came from.
Yeah, so there's that book, too. So, yeah.
You know what I'm reading?
Of course. Is it Harry Potter?
Well, I'm listening to the first audiobook of Harry Potter. Harry
Who
Potter
reads
and Sorcerer's
it?
Stone. John Dale. He does a really good job.
Oh, I thought it was Stephen Fry.
No, okay, there is a version of it that is read by Stephen Fry. I'm convinced. I cannot find it anywhere.
I thought so because I was reading something that said that he got introduced to J.K. Rowling.
Right.
And he was like, have you heard this story?
No.
Oh, but he got introduced to J.K. Rowling and
Ray's really upset about this though.
And like he was sort of passive about it. He's like, oh, I heard you read a book. Good for you. And then like later on he couldn't say Harry pocketed it. And he was like they called her and they're like, Can he say Harry put it in his pocket? And then she was like, nope. And so then for the rest of the books, she wrote Harry pocketed it because he couldn't say it because he was such a jerk to her when
yeah.
he first met.
Wow.
I don't know if this is true. I read it on the internet.
There's a version,
so,
and everyone talks about it on the British panel shows, which I watch excessively on YouTube, about him reading that book. And the version of it that's on my Libby from my public library, which is an Overdrive company, they have the John Dale version, which is the official J.K. Rowling website version, that if you buy it from her website, Pottermore, that's the version you get is John Dale, who does a great job, and I really enjoy it. But I really want the Stephen Fry one, and
I don't know
how to get it.
It's like when the Sorcerer's Stone came out, and it was really the Philosopher's Stone
right.
in England, and so you can only get it in
well,
England.
Maybe what you should just do is look it up in OCLC, because if it exists and it's library available, and then you can either interlibrary loan it or mail cat it.
Just go to WorldCat, you'll find it.
And then I just finished a book called Hashtag Murder Trending, which I just finished it yesterday. It was really good. It's, I think I talked about it on the other podcast, but it's about this girl who gets framed for her stepsister's murder.
Ooh.
And meanwhile they have the president of the United States is a reality TV show star. Shocker.
It's hard entertaining real life.
And this guy named the Postman has set up this island called Alcatraz 2.0, and that's where they send like mobsters and killers and people that are convicted of murder to Alcatraz 2.0, where they then get murdered live by these serial killers that all have these like personas. So there's a Robin Hood, there's Molly Mahler, and then one of the characters is actually one of the serial killers is so and so from Marquette, Michigan. They like figure out her identity, and she's from Marquette, Michigan, and she's one of the serial killers on the show.
Is the author from Michigan?
I don't know. I didn't look it up, but a lot of times they are if they put someone from Michigan.
I was gonna say, and especially Marquette, because it's not like they said Detroit or Grand Rapids.
Well, it was all alliterative, so it was like so and so.
Yeah.
It was Molly Mahler from Marquette, Michigan. But anyway, that book was actually really good, and the second one's coming out soon. The teenagers that volunteered at the library for summer reading this summer, they were confused by this ending part.
Did you figure it out?
I did figure it out for them and texted her and told her the answer. But they were like, you need to read this, Ray. And so,
and explain it.
And explain it to us. So I did.
Very confused.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
I found it.
She found it in WorldCat.
Excellent.
So anyway, that's what I've been reading. And then let's see. I saw Detective Pikachu last night with my mom, which was just...
I'd watch it.
It was on demand. It was with cable.
Okay.
And then...
I was like, I'm not going to pay for it, but I thought if it was on HBO, I'd be like...
It's not yet, but...
Detective Pikachu.
We did watch Julio Torres' My Favorite Shapes on HBO, which I highly recommend, and it was really, really, really funny. And I like him, and he has the show Los Espookies, which is a Spanish show on HBO about these...
No, I know what you're talking about.
Fred Armisen.
Just love the way you just said it.
Los Espookies. My mom and I like really weird, absurd comedy, so that was fun.
I guess so.
So that's it. That's all that's been going on.
All right.
Thanks for coming on the podcast, Laura.
Oh,
did you have a good time?
Yes, it was excellent. I told someone, I was writing a letter to a friend of mine earlier, and I said, I don't know if they're going to ask me, but I feel vastly unprepared.
Do you want people to follow you on Twitter?
If they want to, but I'm very boring on Twitter.
Do you want to say your name on Twitter?
Yeah,
no.
That would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's at Loons, but I'm not.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is. At Loons.
I think.
LOONS.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.